This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 291, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners just like you.
You are forgiven.
Of the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 291 for those of you keeping score at home. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here as always with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
And filling in for the erstwhile and once again on the run, Connor Kilpatrick, is Mr. Paul Montgomery.
Yeah.
Yeah. He jumped bail.
I know. It's getting to be a problem, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing. I didn't want to be the one to say it, but yeah.
Carol's not happy. Let's just put it that way.
You called. I'm here.
Yes, we're happy you're here, Paul. Thank you. We're referring to our friend who likes to cheat the law. Anyway, so we are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website that's dedicated to the wonderful world of comics and comic book culture. And every week we read a whole stack of comics that come out on Wednesday, much like a lot of you do. And then one of us has the task of whittling down his stack to the book that he felt was the pick of the week, the book that he enjoyed the most for varying reasons, and then goes and writes a review of it on ifanboy.com. Then we come back here to the podcast to discuss it, as well as other comics that came out, other comics-related things. I like to say the word comics every other word.
It's a good system.
Yeah, it's a good system. So before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning. We're going to talk about what happens in the books, which is often called spoiling. So if you haven't read your comic books, you want to press pause, come back so you don't get stuff ruined. Or if you don't press pause, just be warned. You might have stuff spoiled, and don't come crying to us. It's not our fault. Right. So with that warning out of the way, Josh, you had the pick. And tell us why scalp number 50 got pick of the week.
Ain't no easy life out on the plains. Man got to know. I don't know what I'm doing.
What accent are you doing?
I know, yeah.
I don't know. It always ends up in George Bush now. Because it turns out that my voice is exactly like all impressions of George Bush, W. Bush. I don't know how that happened, but it's very terrible. I picked scalp number 50. Actually read this a little bit early, and I was like, oh, that's going to be the pick. And people think sometimes, like, oh, you guys just go with your favorites and whatever. I'm going to tell you something. It is hard to write another good review of Scalped. It's not an easy thing. It'd be much easier to write a pick of the week about some other book that I've never written about before, because I have to think about some other way.
You said so much about it. Yeah.
Something about it. Now, this was the 50th issue in comic books. Anything with a 50 or a 75 or any milestone they can take, they're going to turn that into a thing. But this was if you look at the front cover, you'll see sort of a list of names: Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerra, the regular creators, and then Igor Corday, Tim Truman, Jill Thompson, which I thought was an odd choice. Jordy Bernay, Dennis Cowan, Dean Haspiel, I think it's Brendan McCarthy, and Steve Dillon are listed on the front. And I thought, well, how's that going to work out? And so I start reading it, and it's R.M. Guerra at the beginning for most of the book. And then there's a little bit of a sequence by Igor Corday, and then a series of pinups of various characters done by those different artists in it. But it's actually incorporated into the story for the whole thing. So it isn't just like
really cool.
Yeah, it wasn't like a gallery at the back, which is
exactly
fine, but it's a little like, okay, what was the point? Now, this is the 50th issue, but it was also it's a jumping-on point. Jason Aaron said it, and I was thinking when I read it, because it's sort of a standalone story as you go back in history. The whole series is about the Prairie Rose Indian Reservation, which is fictitious, and what happens there now. But this sort of goes back to before that, and talks about scalping and what it actually is, the name of the series, and it's gruesome is what it is. It's cutting off the scalp of your enemy. It was done by the Indians, and then it was done to the Indians, and then back, and it was a very gruesome time. The story takes place in it's just a little short story that takes place in the winter of 1876, and a guy and his son are professional scalpers, and he's training him to do it, and they show him cutting off the scalp of some dude, and then, you know, there's a fight, and there's some righteous...
Got him on clotheslines, collection of scalps, and yeah, it's pretty gruesome.
They got paid for it. That was how it worked. The government would pay, or you know, local towns or whoever would pay, you know, to try to get because this is this contested territory that the Americans wanted to settle and use, but the Indians were already there. So there was this whole thing going on that was part economics and part racism and part, you know, Western expansion and all that. It's a really interesting time. One of the things that Aaron did in this was I don't think like he... There's a way to look back at history and say, well, the Indians were very peaceful, and they weren't. They were really violent, you know, savage warriors. Some of them, not all of them. But this all plays into that. It was a very violent time. And it's not like a PC look at everything. It sort of looks at it the way that we understand it in history right now. I've done some reading about this kind of stuff. I'm very interested in this time period. And you see that they capture this one Native American and they bring him to what's going to become the Prairie Rose Reservation. And he has like a vision, and you go through all these different sites of the different characters, you know, through the book done by these pinup artists. And, you know, they're really – sometimes you get pinups, you'd be like, oh, that's really cool. But these – for whatever reason – because I know the characters, or because of the order that they put in, they really are quite arresting. When you flip to the one page, the first page that Jordy Bernay has this picture of Carol, who's sort of the love interest of the book, and she's basically lying naked on a bed. But it just
in that perfect Jordy Bernay style. Oh,
yeah,
I love Jordy Bernay,
yeah. And it's a pretty mesmerizing image, and not just for the fact that it's a naked woman, but there's a lot more to it, especially if you know about the character and how tortured she is. Like, you just are trying to read her face and figure out what it is. You know, opposite of that is the, you know, the wise old grandmother on the porch with her pipe, and like the piles of dogs, and that in Jill Thompson's painted style, which is really nice. You keep going through, and you know, it's all really good. And then you get to the end, and the last pit up is a shot of Shunka and Red Crow done by Steve Dillon. And I was floored by this. I was like, wow, that's Steve Dillon. Like, you know, he does a lot of work, and it's all very good. But sometimes you get used to seeing it. But, man, the sort of intensity that he puts in their eyes, and they're just staring at you in the camera, and the coloring that actually went along with this was all.
Don't skip over the amazingness of Brendan McCarthy on the page across from it.
No, I'm not.
McCarthy, so good. And this is another, he did that miniseries, that Spider-Man Doctor Strange miniseries for Marvel a couple years ago that was just trippy and crazy. But like, Brendan McCarthy is one of those creators that I don't think a lot of the regular comic reading audience knows about, and they totally should.
Yeah, and you know, amazing. You know, the Dean Haspiel shot of the guy, you know, outside the liquor store, and it's not Leonard Peltier, but basically it's supposed to be, because the word rage is sort of bolded in the other page by Dennis Cowan, sort of that side of the Native American rights movement and all that. It's just like this great sequence that I haven't, you know, I just kind of didn't expect, and it really, really took me. But besides that, like, it was the whole issue. It is a little bit out of continuity of the regular series, in that you don't need to have read what came before it, and you could not read this and you'd be fine going forward. But it really gives a really good flavor. So if you wanted to sample it, it's a good issue to read.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
also,
when I saw you pick this, I went and grabbed it and picked it up. And I've only read the first trade of Scalp, so that's all I know of it. And you know, you totally. I mean, it's basically just a tale of scalping it's more of a setting the context for the setting than anything that I got from it. The fact that it all takes place in what I assume is the town where Scalp takes place in, and you see it through. And I just like the juxtaposition of bouncing between the Americans doing scalping to the Indians doing scalping and going through the ages. I thought that was really well done. I mean, it was all right. I mean, it wasn't my pick of the week, but I understand why it was, because you have an emotional connection to it and all to the book, and after reading it for 50 issues and that sort of thing. But I mean, it's well done. There's no argument. I mean, this is a little wordy.
First couple pages, I noticed that too. There was a lot of word balloons. It's actually the lettering is actually done in a different style than the book normally is.
Yeah.
Too, I thought was supposed to indicate, I guess, a different time. You know what? I want to give credit to Igor Corday. Because I was not a big fan. You know, this is the guy who basically came in and filled in. I know him from New X-Men.
Well, that's 10 years ago.
Yeah,
dude.
I know. I haven't seen him very much since then.
Yeah, he's been working in Europe, I think. And I
wasn't a big fan of it, but these pages that he did are fantastic. They reminded me of John Severin, which is a big compliment. They looked really good. It was a great issue. If you read this series, I think that it's going to work out. You know, you're definitely going to feel it. And if you haven't, it's a good sample. You know, if you're into this, then you'll be into reading the whole series. It'll just get better from there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no arguing that Jason Aaron is one of the best writers right now, and this is his thing. And it's so easy to do a 50th issue and then just have a bunch of pinups, but integrating them into the story like that. I mean, they did a similar thing with DMZ, I think, with the 50th issue it was, where they had a bunch of pinups and Brian Wood just wrote text over the pinups, and this was more integrated into the story, and I kind of like that. Not knowing who any of the characters were, the fact that the text boxes, like, I was able to make a connection between what was being said and who the person was, and extrapolate from that, and that's just well done. So
I was really impressed with that. It's sort of like the whole issue is like a tone poem sort of, and it encapsulates all, you know, 49 issues that came before. And I think if you wanted to sell somebody on Scalped, hand them this maybe even before you give them the first trade, because I don't think it ruins that much, and it just gives you an overview.
Anything.
Yeah, no, it gives you an overview of what the series is like and what he's trying to say with it. And also, I think, is a really good example of his writing. It is a little wordy in the beginning, but I thought all the words were good. I don't know.
I agree with that. Have you read much of this, Paul, or is this the only one you read?
I read this in trade. So I've read about the first four trades or so.
Okay.
And I slowly catch up on it. But I definitely wanted to pick this up because I knew it was going to be something special. So
I had never noticed that the logo itself was actually a scalping.
I saw that immediately. That was
I saw it. I mean, I saw it on this cover. Of course, Jock has been the cover artist for the whole thing. Yeah.
It's an exceptionally violent book, even for Scalp standards. But
even the cover,
but for some reason it doesn't feel like super gratuitous. Like there's a reason that this is violent. Like there's a reason that this is so brutal. And again, and like you said, it's not it doesn't feel like super political on one side. It's just showing you the truth of what happened of both groups. And yeah, it was just ugly and it's just horrific stuff. And when you say something like scalped or like how that works, like it should look this like repugnant and horrifying. So
yeah, exactly. I was actually really surprised when I looked in the front that it was only $2.99. I was like, oh, I thought it was like a big special issue or something.
I don't think it was any more than 22 pages, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was normal size.
I felt like I got my money's worth, I guess.
Oh, totally, yeah.
I thought I was like, what did I pay for this? Like, and I thought it was going to be like $4 or something.
Yeah. So, cool. So, so if I had pick of the week, being the Marvel zombie that I am, it would have absolutely been Avengers Children's Crusade, number 6, which every time this book comes out, the 2-month release schedule always gets me grumbling. You know, not that I have a problem remembering it, but it's just like and this is when the book was solicited. We knew this would be the problem, which is that there's such a time period between when the book comes out and between when this comes out. It's not that I forget what happens, it's just I forget that it existed. You know,
yes.
And
it's also not really in the sort of continuity, so.
Well, I don't.
That's the thing. Like, it's fuzzy, so even a little harder to sort of keep a tab on
to see where it pushes into, and really that's where push comes to shove on that topic is this issue. And this is someone had texted me like halfway through the day, have you read Avenger Children's Crusade yet? And I was just like, no, why? Like, oh my god, it was amazing. And so I already had that going into it, and I gotta admit, on the first hand, Jim Chung, this might be the best issue of the whole series. Dude is good. I mean, like, it's scary how good he is, you know. Yeah. Like,
it's worth 2 months is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's totally worth 2 months. And then Middley Heinberg delivered, and Josh, you probably love the Hawkeye bits in this.
I forgot to pick this up.
Oh, well, there you go.
I got home and I looked and I was like, oh crap, I missed it. Like, yeah. I just missed it.
Yeah, well, you're in for a treat when you pick it up, because there's some great Hawkeye stuff in the early on. And basically what happens is that now, you know, it opens up with the fact that Scarlet Witch now is back, knows who she is, and confirm that it is indeed her, and they're at the Avengers Mansion, and she realized what she's done and what happened in the past. And there's great little character moments where, like, Beast, Jessica Jones, and Hawkeye are there as well. And Jessica Jones is, of course, confused and saying, well, you know, they found her. And Hawkeye's like, yeah, well, you know, it's not really that hard to find her. And Beast is like, yeah, yeah, that's true. And Hawkeye's like, wait, you found her? And Beast is like, yeah, we had tea. And then Hawkeye's like, yeah, so did we. And then Jessica's like, you slept with her. So it was a nice little Bendis-esque Avenger banter, you know, kind of about what, you know, about Scarlet Witch and what's been going on for the past couple of years. So that was enjoyable.
So the closet?
Yeah, no mention of the closet. I was hoping for the closet. But so essentially what happens is you have Scarlet Witch realizing and then wanting to make up for it, and Beast suggesting, well, you said no more mutants before. Why don't you just not say more mutants? And pretty much the whole issue is spent questioning whether or not she can do that or not. And so they decide to test it, and so they call X-Factor, and she offers to restore Richter's powers, because he lost his powers in M-Day. And so there's some great Madrox dialogue about, like, about the ramifications of that and why would they do that and that sort of thing, and they're not going to go with it. But then Richter's like, no, I want my powers back. And so she zaps him, and he has his powers back. And
I didn't know that she could direct her powers that
well. And they deal with that a lot in her saying, I don't know if I can do it, and all, it's not that simple. And there's a lot of discussion about that. I mean, when you read the issue, you'll see, like, it does address that. And so then, but it works. And so so somebody's like, okay, well, that's one down, a million more to go. And
he sets up a booth. And
yeah, exactly. And then it ends with basically the X-Men arriving on the scene and them saying, well, you might want to deal with them first. And the X-Men are all angry. And so it's, you know, Cyclops, Rogue, Colossus, Storm, Emma, Iceman, Gambit. And it just looks, and it ends with Scarlet Witch going, well, you know, I'll just give the X-Men what they want, more mutants. So is this going to be like, so the question is that we've got three more issues left to this issue. Is this going to be the kind of thing that only happens in this series and it's not going to affect the status quo, or is this going to affect the status quo and they're going to restore the mutants? I don't know.
I've heard some uproar about that, and that Richter thing being a big deal, because that's been a pivotal plot point for X-Factor, and it happens out of that series in this weird sort of fringe title. And
yep.
The other thing I just wonder is, you know, we haven't seen Scarlet Witch at all in any of the other books. I mean, this is, it's just,
it's totally contained, you know, to this
it's
book.
It's totally contained within this. So when this is over in 20, 14. Are we going to start? Is she just going to suddenly pop up in, you know, Avengers and New Avengers and what other Avengers books are going to be out at that time on that landscape?
We don't know. And that's the problem with this delayed release schedule. And say, you know, like when you're telling a story that is keyed off of continuity, and whether or not it actually affects continuity is up in the air. I mean, this could be a self-contained story, and it could end after the 9 issues, and we'll be back to where we started, except that Scarlet Witch is back, but nothing happens.
It's like a what-if story. It's a really long, well-drawn what-if story.
Right, which I hope – but part of me hopes isn't the case, and they're not acting like it is.
Well, the thing is, wouldn't this – because the X-Men are going through a whole huge thing now.
Yep.
So that this is fairly big for that world, so it would really throw all that stuff off.
Unless they plan for it.
Should.
Unless they plan for it, yeah.
It feels like it should be in continuity. Like it feel like if it's not,
it
then
definitely
it,
does
a little
yeah.
bit. Like what the point?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then that's really the real challenge. But you know, but that's the kind of thing that you spend hours arguing about in the comic shop. And
yeah.
Ultimately, though, it just looks beautiful. It just looks great. So I mean, but it was
does Wolverine spend the whole issue being held back from slicing her?
No, he's barely in it. There's only one scene. Where Captain America and Iron Man and Magneto and Wolverine are in the ship going back because they were in Europe in the previous issue. And so there's just one scene where they're and Quicksilver's with them where they're on their way and they're like an hour out and Iron Man yells at Hawkeye to tell him to keep Scarlet Witch there and would by whatever means necessary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little threatening there. But I mean, it was really, really solid dialogue, great art, and you know, it looks like it could have ramifications, but we'll have to see in 6 months.
Well, all right then. Let us journey to the world of Flashpoint.
Our last week of the all-encompassing reviewing every Flashpoint book that came out. So I believe so. Without Connor here, I'm the only one who tried all four, right?
I'm sticking to my average of one per week.
Okay, and Paul, how many
did
you get?
I did two.
You did two. All right. So we're gonna start with Flashpoint Project Superman, which is the first issue of a 3-issue mini written by Scott Snyder and Lowell Francis with art by Gene Ha. Co-plotted by Scott Snyder. Big potential there. Gene Ha, Scott Snyder. Did it deliver? Oh, wait, did either of you guys get this book?
Yes.
Okay, so all three of us got it. So did it deliver for you?
Kind of.
Okay, Paul?
I would say yeah. Intrigued is the big thing.
What I thought was interesting, less from a story standpoint, Gene Ha or Howard Chaykin?
That's what I said, kind of.
Yeah.
Because it was not the Gene Ha that I expected. It was not bad.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's bad, but
it was a very Chaykin-esque Gene Ha. I was surprised.
Yeah.
It's true. See that. I like it. It works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just a huge fan of his style, and to have it to be a little different, a little rougher, a little less.
A little looser, a little more cartoony.
Yeah. And I normally am all for that, but it wasn't what I was expecting with it. And I was like, I remember I actually went back to the beginning. I was like, is this Gene Ha? It says it's Gene Ha.
Yeah. It's a different Gene Ha.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. It's Gene A. Ha.
Yeah.
No, the other guy, you know, the one who did Top 10, he was Gene P. Ha.
Yeah.
So that's I can see people make that mistake a lot.
Yeah.
Were you guys wondering sort of like where is this going? Like, where is Superman? Yeah. Like, how's this working? Or like, how is Superman related to this? Because it's sort of like doing like a different version of Captain America.
Well, did you finish the issue?
I did. Okay, yeah. But as I was reading it, were you sort of like that? It was one where it was like it wasn't apparent from the beginning what the connection was to the character.
Yes.
I actually had to go back. I had to go back to the beginning a couple of times to be like, what's happening again? Okay, right.
Yeah,
that's the present and that's 30, because I knew that Superman was involved somehow, and then I really like the concept. I really like the character. I felt a little bit like what was that the story from Arcudi and Snaberg a little while ago from Wildstorm?
The God Somewhere.
Felt a little like that. Yeah. And a little, like you said, a little Captain America. So it was like a mix of those things. It didn't necessarily feel original,
right. But
I was compelled to keep reading. So
yeah, I think the this is a 3-issue mini, and it'll be interesting. Superman isn't even introduced until the end of this issue. Yeah. This is another character, and it's a super soldier created by General Lane, basically. And I was wondering, are they using Superman DNA?
Nope.
And
nope.
It's just like Superman pops up. So he's going to be the next one in this program. So we are going to see, I mean, we only see baby Superman in this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here. But this is one where I think they're definitely thinking outside of the box, even if the concept on its own does feel a little bit familiar, but it doesn't feel familiar to Superman.
Yeah, or the DC universe or that sort of thing. Yeah, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it was enjoyable.
So the Judgment, are you going to stick with it?
Yes.
I'm sticking with it, yeah.
Okay. It depends on the week it comes out. If it's a heavy week, I could drop it. I could go either way. So
see that.
All right.
If it wasn't for the anime hair, I think it'd be a
yeah, the
a
anime
straight.
Hair was actually a little rough. Anyway. All right, so the highly anticipated one-shot, The Canterbury Cricket. Paul, you're with me on this book, right?
Yeah, I am. Okay, this right. is, I had to. Yeah.
Did it deliver your expectations, your hopes and dreams?
No, I don't. My expectations fluctuated in the months since we first heard about this.
I really like the words on the front.
Like the words on the front. No, this is if I don't know about expectations, but it's a really weird story. And one of the things that I sort of thought about as I was reading it was, don't think of this as like a superhero book. Think of this as like a lost, like creepy issue. Or like, you know, something from like the House of Mystery or something like that.
Sure.
It just feels like a weird like horror story because it's this. And here's the thing. The big question was, is this like an analog for any character in the regular DCU? It is not. Right. It's an all
Although
new character.
He is a member of a team called Ambush Bugs.
And it includes like Blue Beetle and Queen Bee and Cockroach and people like that. But basically, this is just like some asshole who like let a girl like die like in his place. Like he pushed this girl in front of him like a human shield, and then hid in the Canterbury Cathedral or whatever, and it collapsed on him while he was holding the skull of a saint with a cricket in it. And his name was kind of crickety, and the cathedral crumbled on him.
Rubbing his legs together,
and he came out, and he's a mutant cricket thing, and with an elephant snout.
And he doesn't know why or how.
He doesn't know why. Yeah, he's like, it's a big mystery. But
his last name was Chriqui.
And his first name was like very similar to Jeremy like Jiminy. Cricu. It was like Jeremy Cricket.
And what's great is that the whole premise of the issue is that they're on the run from the Amazons in England, and he teams up with Etrigan and his team, which is Etrigan, Mrs. Hyde, Wicked Ginny Greenteeth, and Godiva. And they're sitting around the campfire, and so they're telling their like how they got here stories, and we get the Canterbury Cricket goes first, and then before anybody else can tell their story, they're like, oh, we gotta go. It was very much a moment in time.
This is the origin story of this brand new character, and that leads into the Lois Lane and the Resistance series. So we'll be seeing more of Etrigan, and apparently we'll be seeing more of the Canterbury Cricket there. I don't know how big a role the Canterbury Cricket, like, is the Canterbury Cricket the hero of all Flashpoint? I certainly hope so, because he's ridiculous. I thought this was fun, just in, like, we got rhyming Etrigan, which I always love.
That's always good.
So he's telling some rhymes, and this is not for everybody. This is for me, but that doesn't mean anything to you. I had fun with it, and I love the way Rags Morales draws the Canterbury Cricket. He's such a weird looking character, and it's such a weird origin story, and he's like weirdly religious, and I don't know.
It's the kind of story that only a high placed editor at DC could get put through.
Anyway, all right. So it's a one shot, so I was not sticking with it. But you weren't upset by your.
I am excited to see where the Canterbury Cricket goes, and I'm sort of annoyed that he doesn't have his own book in the DC reboot.
I'm also kind of excited to see what would happen.
Well, considering your position, Paul, as the president of the Canterbury Cricket fan club, I could see why you'd be annoyed by that. So
there are four of them.
Yeah,
I saw that title, and I knew it was for me.
Yep, exactly. It's a good logo. So anyway, all right. So Canterbury Cricket. So next one is the one shot Green Arrow Industries. Am I the only one? Who...
You're on your own for these.
I was intrigued, but the creative team didn't make me want to pick it up.
I'm the sucker who fell for this one. All right, so this is a one shot. This is tough because for a couple of reasons. One is that it suffers from two different artists. You got Marco Castiello did the first five pages, then Igara did the remaining 15, which normally is good, and I love Igara, but you could tell it was really rushed. And the premise is basically Oliver Queen has inherited his family's military defense, company type thing, yeah. And it starts off with him introducing their new missiles called the Green Arrows, and we meet his head of security, who is Roy Harper, who has two arms, by the way, and a goatee. And basically, Oliver Queen is the rich you know, entrepreneur who's never lifted a finger, that sort of thing, that premise. And then his entire factory gets attacked, and everybody gets killed. Roy gets killed, and there's the moment where he's got to say, you know, okay, well, I've got to fight. You know, this whole big inspiring, like, you know, if you're gonna be inspired, you're just gonna watch. You're gonna do something. If you got something in it, then you got to do it. And he picks up the bow, and then throws it aside and goes for the other weapons. So it's like at every moment it took that little cliche kind of approach and went the other direction, but in an eye-rolling, nauseating kind of way. and so the premise was that as opposed to picking up the arrow, he actually had a collection of villains' weapons. So he had the Pied Piper Sonic Blaster and Rainbow Raider's goggles and Mr. Element's gun and the Topps explosives and the Trickster's boots. And so he uses that to run out into the woods, and he fights this woman who has a bow and arrow. And, you know, so it's just like it was just like all like it was just an uninspired cliche kind of approach to Green Arrow in this other universe that really didn't show any real ingenuity. Very similar to like Legion of Doom, where it was like, all right, well, yes, I see the ties between Flashpoint and the regular DC universe that we're aware of, and the irony of that by the end of the issue, he's got to pick up the woman's bow and shoot her with an arrow to stop her, like that sort of thing. And it's just it was annoying.
I've found that the Flashpoint tie-ins that stray the farthest away.
Yep.
And like, don't play into those like the tropes of the regular characters are the most interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. So anyway, so real quickly, the next one is the Hal Jordan first issue of a 3-issue series, and this one was the art I just didn't like. It was that kind of painted, photorealistic kind of style that Ben Oliver does, and which he did a book for Marvel as well that came out this week. That I just don't like really his style. But essentially, it's just as typical of the Hal Jordan hotshot pilot story as you can get. Like, it didn't really veer that much from it, except
is he just a pilot?
He's just a pilot. Yep. And it ends with him finding Abin Sur. It ends with him finding a Green Lantern and saying, "Help me save the universe." So.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was about it. I'm not gonna stick with Hal Jordan. So.
And not Green Arrow, I assume.
Yeah. No. Green Arrow was a one shot. So that damage was done. So.
All right. Fair enough.
Anyway. All right. So
there it is.
So
that was all with Flashpoint.
Yeah. So we're done. So we're only gonna be talking about Flashpoint books that demerit talking about, like our normal comics. So.
And there won't be another Gorilla Grodd one. So I won't be talking about any.
Which
of them.
Is a shame. So.
It's a damn shame. Is what it
That's
is.
That's one I missed.
Go back. Detective Comics number 878. Jock Scott Snyder. This was a pretty good issue. It was sort of a culmination to the storyline that had been going on about it was my pick of the week about the whale and the dead woman that was found in the bank, and it was pretty good. You know, it's what you come to expect. I really like Jock, obviously. Big fun. And then the end just slaps you in the face. If I had a page of the week. For something I didn't expect to see, it was the very last bit of this. I kind of don't want to ruin it, but we gave you a spoiler warning. So the James Gordon, who we've been looking at all along, and he's like, well, is he reformed? Is he not? Is he what's this feeling that his dad has about him? No, everything's fine. No, he's a twisted serial killer, horrible person.
Yeah.
And he's sawed off the limbs of this guy.
This is familiar. This is they did this in History of Violence, not the movie, but the comic.
Yeah,
they did the same thing. They have a guy that they keep alive for years and years, and presumably, based on the backstory of the character that we know, this is like a childhood friend or something of James Gordon and Dick Grayson, or at least they a mutual acquaintance, and they've been keeping him alive with like chopping off his limbs and using a gnarly looking saw to do it too.
Yeah.
But basically, and he gouged out his eye and basically keeping this guy alive, like suspended by ropes in his basement.
And
it's pretty messed up.
It really is, but I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
I really didn't. And I liked that because I was like, well, little Jim Gordon, everyone will think he's creepy, but he'll actually be a good guy in the end. Not true.
All right, then.
True at all.
So almost a year since it was announced at San Diego last year, Robert Kirkman's Skybound imprint finally put out Witch Doctor #1.
Yeah, and it was really good.
It was really good.
Speaking of, we're going to talk about things that remind us of it. It reminded me very much of sort of a cross between Doctor Who and Mysterious the Unfathomable.
Yeah, I can see that.
But regardless, I was really interested in it. I wanted to know what was going to happen next, and I found the character very charming.
This is an occult sort of detective kind of character, except not a detective, a physician. And basically each issue is going to be him exploring a different matter of the supernatural with a medical eye to it. And he's got two assistants, one who's an everyman kind of guy, and then this really creepy girl in a hood whose hands can turn into, like, her fingers can turn into hypodermic needles. And there's some weird mystery about her that we're going to find out as the issues progress. And this one's about exorcism. There was a preview in Walking Dead that was that dealt with vampirism. We're going to deal with, I think, fairies in the next issue. You mentioned Mysterious the Unfathomable. Art reminded me a bit of Tom Fowler in a way. Yeah. Maybe not as distorted, but still pretty crazy, and some really great demon designs in it. And this is a lot of fun. And they refer to it as like House meets Fringe, which I think is pretty apt.
Yeah, I had no when I first saw the description of this. I was like, I'll look at it, whatever. But I was like, this is fun. I was really having a good time with it.
Yep. And if you're curious about more about it, you can go back on ifanboy.com. Paul, you spoke to some of the creators and did a commentary about the first issue that people can go check.
That's
out.
That's right. It's full color commentary. I had a good time.
Yeah. So go check that out. Who'd you talk to again? Did you talk to the writer?
That's Brandon Seifert, the writer. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay. Cool. So people should go check that out on ifanboy.com. It was earlier last week. So just start to go back in the archive. And you can find it. So sweet. So looking forward to the next issue of that one. So until then, though, if you need some comics to get you through the day, you should check out Digital Comics at Graphically. Graphically and iFanboy have been working together for a little over a year now, and we've been helping the folks over at Graphically build up their digital comics site and offerings. And I got to admit, a lot of comics in there. There are over 4,000 comics now available from Marvel Comics, Top Cow, Boom, IDW, Archaea, Red 5, tons of great publishers. We just added Aspen and Dynamite. So if you're interested in those kind of comics, Aspen and Dynamite, they're there waiting for you. Some of the Green Hornet books and some Garth Ennis stuff is coming from Dynamite, and chicks in bathing suits from Aspen. That's pretty cool.
Just in time for the summer.
Exactly. So go to graphically.com. You check out the brand new website that is awesome and lets you read comics via the web, as well as you can grab the embed code and go post them on your own website and share them with your friends, that sort of thing. So very cool stuff. Also got apps for Android phones and tablets, iPhone and iPad, so you can buy a comic on the website, go to your device, download it, sync it up, and you can read it on the device, no problem at all. Very, very cool. If you're interested in the Barnes & Noble Nook Color, if you pick up one of those, Graphically's got some comics in there. You can get Mouse Guard, Near Redeemable, and Wanted in a nice little kind of Nook kind of package. So definitely check that out if that's more your speed. But yeah, so go to Graphically.com, check it all out. Make sure you follow Graphically on Twitter.com/Graphically for all the great news and bits and announcements of more great comics that are coming. And we're going to just have more stuff coming up to San Diego Comic-Con, so definitely want to stay in touch with that. So check out Graphically.
Speaking sort of Robert Kirkman, whose company released, whose imprint released Witch Doctor, Super Dinosaur 3 came out this week, and this is all ages book, which is basically it's a lot of possible toys, basically.
Yeah,
you can snap onto the dinosaur. But I do find it incredibly charming, and I just think Jason Howard is doing really wonderful work.
Yeah.
His big splash images and things like that. It's a totally different style than what he did in the Wolfman book. But it fits really well, and it's a lot of fun, actually. I kind of can't wait for my kid to be old enough to do it.
Yeah, I like how he's adapted a style on it. It's really good.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Cool. So Amazing Spider-Man number 664. I'm finding now the new tale of the tape with Amazing Spider-Man is that when Dan Slott co-writes an issue, in this case, Dan Slott and Christos Gage wrote this issue, it's awesome. And when it's only just Dan Slott, not so good. This issue was a lot of fun. Mr. Negative got revealed, a lot of Anti-Venom and Eddie Brock stuff, which was actually really kind of funny. And I really enjoyed the issue. It was like a good old fashioned Spider-Man issue. I really enjoyed it. So
tell us about this Iron Age though.
So on the Iron Age number one from Marvel, if you want a little alternate from Flashpoint and you want to go, if you're more of a Marvel fan, you want a little alternate universe, this great little story of Tony Stark in the past, present Tony Stark in the past, trying to stop disaster in the future. Great Lee Weeks art. I love Lee Weeks. He's so good. But you get Tony yelling at his own drunken self, which is always amusing. And all the Avengers thinking that he's drunk because he grabs drunk Tony's costume and the helmet stinks of alcohol, so they think he's drunk. Very amusing. And there was a shorter story in the back that was written by Rob Williams with art by Ben Oliver that I didn't really love the art, but it had Captain Britain, and it's always good to see Captain Britain. So, yeah.
You love good old Brian. Now, Ultimate X, I get my Ultimates mixed up. Is this the Art Adams one?
Yeah, this is the last issue of the Jeff Ultimate X number 5. It's the last issue of the Jeff Loeb Art Adams, and this leads into the new Ultimate X-Men book. This basically set the team that's going to be in the new Ultimate X-Men book of Jean Grey, or Karen, as she's known now, and Wolverine's son, and the new Angel, and the Fiery Girl, and they added the Hulk in this issue, and had a great big fight with Sabretooth. But the star of this issue is Art Adams. This is some of the best Art Adams I've seen in years. So if you're an Art Adams fan, you need to go pick up this whole book. And there was a nice little last page end cap by the editor, Mark Panicia, about the experience and about working with these guys. That was actually kind of heartfelt. It was nice. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Butcher Baker number 4 came out, and this was Joe Casey and Mike Hoddleston's sort of odd exploration of post-superhero concepts, which is something that Joe Casey does.
Yeah.
I love this issue. This was sort of, if you were thinking that it was getting a little too out there for you, or you weren't, this was just a sort of fun sort of romp kind of issue. But
this was the best issue yet.
Oh yeah, no. Also, just the cover. Cover alone was worth the price of admission.
Yep.
But it was a hell of a lot of fun, and I want more because of this.
Yeah, no.
Any genitals or
no? There was no. Well, there was some. There was some fucking. There was some fucking.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was no. You didn't see any bits. You just saw. You know, like it was
no full frontal.
Full frontal. Yeah.
No, there was a little bit of behind.
There was a little butt and a little side boob, but on the girl.
No. There was a little dangle.
Backle. Oh, was there? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always a little dangle though. Yeah. Oh, I see the dangle. I see you're talking.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway,
this
was the best issue yet, both in terms of, I think, in terms of art, in terms of coloring, in terms of story. I thought it was this was great. So.
And yeah, getting to know the characters a little bit in a way that helps you sort of latch on to them for me.
Yeah. And speaking of great, again, Venom number 4 was
great stuff.
Awesome. And capping with a fantastic scene with Flash and Peter Parker on the couch, and with the great shadow behind both of them. You see the Venom shadow and the Spider-Man shadow. Talk about Remender setting up the setting and setting up the, you know, they know each other, but they don't know each other. Oh, that's good comic booking. So
And Tony Moore was back. I Tom Fowler had done the last issue, but Tony Moore was back for this one. Yeah. I missed Fowler a little bit.
Well, he'll be back. He'll be back. They're trading off.
I know.
They're a good tag team, though. Yeah. They seem to match up really, really well.
Yeah. I really like the conversation that went on between Jack Lantern and Venom, too, like that arch enemy, the idea of that. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I know what they are now.
Exactly. There was a couple of great Venom face panels that Tony Moore did. The best one being when he saw the building explode and thought Betty died.
The sad Venom.
Oh my god, that was great. It was
I love the sort of slack jaw Venom that he does, like his jaw's broken and it's like going over to the side. Yep. Real weird, but there's some great Spider-Man Venom fight action in it.
Yeah, seriously, if I was the kind of guy who changed my Twitter avatar a lot, I think I would use the sad Venom face. But so good times. All right, so those are the books that came out this week that we enjoyed, but you in the iFanboy community enjoyed a bunch of other books, and you went to iFanboy.com and did your pull list and rate and reviewed them, and you made your pick of the weeks. So we want to go through the top 5 pick of the weeks from you, the community, and coming in at number 5 was Witch Doctor number 1 with 7% of the pick of the weeks, which is an impressive showing for a number 1 book, I think.
Yeah, that's really nice.
And this is as the time of recording. When you listen to this, these numbers might have fluctuated as other people make their picks of the week, but still. It gives you a general idea, a barometer, so to speak. So Witch Doctor number 1, 7%. Number 4, Detective Comics 878 at 7.5%. So good showing there. Number 3, Josh's pick of the week, Scalp number 50 with 11%, which is good. Number 2, Batman Incorporated number 7, which we're going to talk about a little bit, got 15% of the pick of the week dispersion. And the number 1 book, everyone seems to agree with me, Avengers Children's Crusade number 6, got 38% of the pick of the week presented.
It's just Marvel zombie fodder. That's all.
Yeah. Hey, it works.
By a really good creative team.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. So on to the user reviews.
Keith, 7198 said of Batman Incorporated number 7, give the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage, like we said, was 15%.
thereabouts. This is easily one of the best Batman Inc. books. This is so much more than Batman goes to find another Batman story. It packs a lot of punch and is almost flawlessly constructed. Morrison's storytelling really shines here, and while Burnham does lose his characters in a few panels, his art is a great compliment to the story. This is a strong issue, and hopefully we will get more of Man of Bats and Raven soon. I found myself over the course of reading this issue enjoying it more and more. Like, at first I was like, this is odd. There's actually like a little, I think I read it right after I read Scalped, so it was
the Indian kind of crossover.
It was very close.
Yeah.
I love the pickup truck Batmobile. Yeah.
I love
the sign outside the Batcave garage.
Yeah, in their Batcave was really the moment when it got me, I think. Yeah. The giant wooden nickel.
I don't read this, but I flipped through this in the store because I love Chris Burnham. I wanted to see the art. And I got to say, though, I'm really thinking about the next issue after that teaser of Tron Batman.
Mm-hmm.
The Batman of the
Cyber
Internet.
Cybercrime Batman.
Yeah, the Batman of the Internet looks awesome.
It does look pretty cool.
I just really like that Morrison dealt with these reservation issues in this. Like, I think he could have done it in a sort of flashy, silly way, but he didn't. And I really enjoyed this. I was kind of surprised by it.
It's pretty brutal too for this series.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
So Paul, why don't you tee up the next review for us?
Okay, all right. Nawida gave Goon number 34 a story of 5 out of 5 and art of 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage 2.3%. It's a comic book and it's really fucking funny. You would think more comic books would be really fucking funny, but you would be wrong. Despite what the cover may lead you to believe, this book, unlike others, doesn't rely on popular memes and pop culture references to make you laugh. Creator Eric Powell understood cartooning better than maybe any comic creator. He knows the art has to contribute to the humor as much as the writing does, and instead of making the book witty, he goes for the most lowbrow humor he possibly can. It's like watching an Orson Welles movie if all Orson Welles wanted to do was make mean-spirited jokes about shitting and eye gouging.
which I think is an accurate review, but I think it's also underplaying that it's the really fucking funny parts are told through some fantastic art by Powell.
Well, he said he's the best cartooning.
I know, but I think it's even more understated than it is. Like, I flipped through, admittedly, I don't buy this, but I slipped through at the store, and I'm like, you know, I should be reading The Goon. This is great. This is great stuff.
Well, this is only the second issue in like 2 years.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not a big commitment.
Right.
It's like it, but this isn't like a turn your brain off kind of book. I mean, there
it's
is some.
Smart. It's very smart.
It is.
Yeah.
It's lowbrow, but in a highbrow kind of way. I don't know. It's very
it's
good.
Like smart people drinking Pabst. It's sort of
it's ironic.
Both areas.
There's
a little
nothing wrong
bit.
With a good PBR every once in a while.
I'm not saying there. See, I'm not. I've actually never been able to get into this book, but I can appreciate what's good about it. And I like hearing this guy. You know, this user review of it. Like, it makes me happy, like, that it exists. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. I love the aesthetic of this book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and do your pull list and rate your comics and write reviews, and you can get one featured on the show. So on to the emails. Our first email comes from Corey D., who says, almost any time I read a solicitation for an upcoming Marvel or DC quote-unquote event, I read it will change the future of that said Marvel or DC universe forever, and at the very least for many years to come. So my question is, in retrospect, which events do you feel truly deserved its pre-sales hype and which didn't? Interesting.
I think that Civil War definitely affected everything for years to come.
House of M.
Yeah. House of M was what I was about to say.
Yep.
Identity Crisis,
Secret Invasion, and Dark Reign, not so much.
Secret diminishing Invasion, returns after Civil War,
not so much. Yeah. But Dark Reign could have. I think they had it.
We're still dealing with it.
Yeah, unless we had it for a year. So like at the end of it, you were like, okay, that'll do.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely still going. The thing is, Marvel was in that sort of perpetual event for years, so it's hard to say.
Identity Crisis was not an event, by the way. It wasn't an event.
That miniseries. I guarantee you, the solicitor said this will change everything forever, and it did.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It definitely created a schism that is still being felt today, and they can constantly refer to it every time.
Not
you know,
until September.
There is a sense that a villain could rape you at any time in DC right now. So that changed the status quo
until September.
Yeah. Until September.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know if that's one they're going to keep or not.
But yeah, they might. That might be on a list, and we're like, yeah, we're gonna keep that.
I think I see what you're saying, Ron.
No, I don't know. I have no idea. I could be wrong. I just wouldn't be surprised. So. Anyway, yeah, I think those are good. I mean, that's the thing is that they're to a certain degree, all of these events affect everything, and that it's always an evolving thing, and it's life, you know, that sort of thing. But you know, and you can't really change that much you know, like said, to a certain degree, it's got to reset back to a certain level. But
you know, brand new day, it's obviously still.
Yeah, no, I think one more day affected everything. So yeah.
All right. You know, they've actually been pretty good about meaning it.
Yeah, they have. They really Marvel has. Marvel definitely has.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when, like I said, you know, however long ago Identity Crisis was, like, I really feel like that changed the tone of everything.
Right, but since,
which
but
actually
that, but,
kind of dude, but led Identity, to the change Identity, that they're going to have now.
But Identity Crisis was, what, seven or eight years ago? Are you still feeling the ramifications of Infinite Crisis, of 52, of Countdown, of Blackest Night, of Brightest Day?
Blackest Night,
reminded
yes.
every once in a while.
Yeah. But not of Infinite Crisis and 52.
No.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Superboy pops up every once in a while, and then you're reminded. But.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, Infinite Crisis, you're definitely that didn't really take.
Yeah. Neither did 52. Was just a diversion of stories, you know. But I don't think they ever said 52 was going to change everything. So. But,
no.
Yeah. Anyway.
It was good.
Yeah. All right.
Rise of
Arsenal did change everything.
I wake up in cold sweats thinking about
it. So does Roy Harper.
It affected me. It changed our lives. Yeah. Sorry, they're alive.
All right, on to the next email.
Dave asks, have you noticed that every comic that features Spidey these last few months, and there have been a lot, have included the image of Spider-Man with his mask rolled up and when he's eating or drinking or something? I think even the recent Heroes for Hire had this scene. I don't think I remember seeing this so much recently. Is it just that Spider-Man is in a lot of books? Is it that Peter is maintaining his secret identity, or that there's some kind of joke everyone hit at the same time? Is it related to the infamous upside-down kiss from the movie, like some kind of spider-based oral fixation?
Well, I don't – that makes me uncomfortable. Thinking how far back was that kiss though?
No, I mean this is a recent. I mean that was 8 years ago too. That was
yes, right, yes.
I mean the thing is that I think it's more tied into what he touched on in maintaining a secret identity,
and
the combination of everyone hitting on the joke. But he's done that since the 60s. So
yeah, but I feel like artists are using it a lot now because it's an interesting image basically.
It really is actually. I always
like different masks to be pulled up too, so they get to play with it with different designs, and he's hanging around with different people and different groups, and different writers get to use him, and it's I think just a classic image.
Yeah,
I think one of the things that's really interesting about it is that so often with superhero costumes and masks included, like you forget that it's a piece of fabric. You just look at it as his face. And so when you move that part of the mask, you're reminded that there's a person underneath it. And that's sort of an artificial cover.
It's a humanizing kind of thing. It's kind of why they always take the mask off in the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Fair enough. So if you have any email questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. It's always good to hear from everybody. So send those emails in.
You people who are iFanboy members are the folks who make the things happen. That's what I'm going to say. If you listen to the show, you like this, what we do, you want to know how to help, the best way is to become an iFanboy member, and that is a person who's contributing directly to the show because you like it, but also because we try to hit you back with a little something special. If you become an iFanboy member, you can do so for $4 a month or $42 a year or $10 a month or $100 a year. If you do that, we will send you some stuff. We'll send you a comic book. The crappier it is, the better. Just in its awfulness, but sometimes they're just regular comic books and
sometimes
some buttons.
They're good comics too.
You don't even know. But for me, like if you get a really crappy one, that's like an honor. That's like a Cracker Jack prize. And some buttons and stickers and things like that. If you're the higher level member, you will also get a T-shirt. But you'll also be eligible for some of the giveaways, and we give away stuff periodically. Sometimes lots of stuff. And if you don't want to go that far, or if you just want to know how else you can help, you can also click on the banners at ifanboy.com, or you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and do your Amazon shopping through that sort of portal to Amazon, and we'll get a little something from that, and you don't have to do anything. It's what you were going to do anyway. So we really do need your support as a website and all the different ways that you can help, and we thank those of you who do. It means the world to us, and thank you.
Excellent.
Put us in your will.
Sure.
And then live dangerously. Like, stop watching when you cross the street.
Yeah.
Just do it by sound.
I'm careful with the put us in your will because I don't want to inherit any sort of animals or
anything. You can inherit a castle.
Yeah.
That really would be pretty awesome.
I like the initiative, Paul, but yeah. So.
All right.
All right, on to the voicemails. Our first voicemails. Everyone wants to talk about Green Lantern.
Hey, fanboy. It's Sean from New York. How you doing? I had a question about Green Lantern. Let's say I was on vacation and I was traveling over to Sector 2813 and their lantern happened to go down the line of duty. Would I be eligible in the ring selection process because I was in that sector at the time, or does the ring take into account your native sector? And if so, how long would I have to stay in that sector before I establish residency?
It's based on residency. Because, like,
you checked into the Green Lantern files, the bureaucracy.
If you go through the database, like, paying attention to the books, like, you know, if you're from Melmac, but you're living on Earth, say, like, Alf, you're going to be chosen to be a Green Lantern of the Melmac sector of the universe and not...
It's where your last established residency and mailing address is, and basically where you file taxes.
I think it's where you live now.
Well, the questions are: is the ring checking a database of all current residents? In which case,
you would be
on that list.
Yeah. I think it's checking mineral levels based on like in your bloodstream, and then
back to the planet you came from.
Exactly. Right. And
I'll
also
tell you something.
How much dedication you have, like if you're not really like patriotic about your planet, like then you're not going to be the Green Lantern of that planet. But anyways, sectors don't matter anymore. People just go, they're stationed on Oa and then they end up wherever they're needed.
Right. Yeah. It's true. That's a good point too. That the sector police kind of thing, they threw that out the window.
Well, that's all going to get thrown out the window anyway.
Yeah, it comes September, so.
So we don't even... I love it. I love it.
I know.
That's the end of everything.
Yeah.
Or not. Whatever.
All right. Thank you, Paul, for that. So our next voicemail has got a question about our collecting.
Hi, guys. This is Nathan from Albuquerque. I was in the military for a long time and moved around all over the country, and every comic book store I ever went to had a different method of doing pull lists. And some of them are very different from others, like using the previews order sheet, and you have to order 2 months ahead of time, and you're kind of locked into what you order, or just writing stuff down on a sheet of paper, and they generally use it that way. So what has been you guys' experience with ordering comics and using pull lists at your comic book stores? And do you guys all use the same comic book store, or what kind of differences have you experienced between the ones that you visited? Thanks a lot, guys. Great show. Appreciate it.
Well, this one's hard to address because literally your experience is common, I think, Nathan, in that every comic book store manages it differently. Ultimately, now, though, we're at the point where every store is basing it off of Diamond and previews and the 3 months listed because that's how they order. So I would be very surprised if you found a store that's not doing that.
Well, how does it work at the store that you own, Ron?
I don't own a store, by the way. But I do maintain a pull list at the store I shop at, and I just give I have a list of the titles I subscribe to. And the thing is that my store owner knows me, so he pulls stuff based on what he thinks that I'd want and that I don't want.
It's like Cheers. Like
yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So I mean, it's not your common. But there are online tools that people use to go and order individual issues. I mean, what about you? I mean, Paul, do you have a pull list at your store? Or?
I have a pull list that I wrote down like years ago when I started, and then now it's since migrated to like their computer system, but it's very casual, and it just, if I want to drop something, I just let the guys know, they know my name there. It's very casual, but they pick up a lot of stuff anyway, so I don't really have to worry about, I'm fortunate in that sense, and I know that not every shop is like that.
Yeah,
I've had every kind like that. I've had, you know, like the list, and they check it, but I had to, if I canceled, then I had to buy it for the next 2 months,
right,
which I didn't like.
Yeah.
See, I don't like, I really try to avoid the pre-ordering process because,
you can't. Connor's not here to shut us down, but we don't have time to get into it. But
you can if you go, if you are lucky enough to be able to go to a shop that pretty much buys one of everything.
Yeah,
and buys one
of everything in multiple copies. That's the thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like, so I try to find shops. Like when I moved just now, like I went to a bunch of shops and I found a bunch didn't carry stuff I wanted. And I found one that pretty much ordered everything, so I didn't have to worry about it. Because I don't – like 3 months ahead of time, I don't want to commit to buying something that week. Like you know how you said earlier that Flashpoint book? You're like, well, we'll see how the week is that it comes out.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to – I don't know. Maybe I'm not going to have any cash that week,
right,
which is sort of flaw of the whole thing. But
my bigger concern with my pull list is just remembering to cancel things that I have stopped reading months ago.
Yeah.
I forget to cancel things. So it's not about forgetting to, oh, I forgot to order this. They're not going to have it because they almost always are.
Yeah.
But
it sucks because the only way you can be guaranteed you're going to get the books you want is by setting up a pull list and doing that sort of thing. But because of the 3 month cycle, there's a certain level of commitment and that sort of thing that, you know, if you decide you don't want something, you're already locked in for the next 3 months or whatever it is. And some stores, you know, so, like I mean, again, because I have a good relationship with my store owner, I just put it back on the shelf. You know, right. But some people get pissed about that because, like, hey, they laid out the $1.25 or whatever, how much the comic costs the store. You know,
non-returnable.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a shitty situation that pretty much Diamond put us all in. So
yeah. Anyway. We also get our stuff early too. Like we're not picking our stuff up on like Saturday, which some people have to do.
Yeah. We get our stuff on Wednesday. We get our stuff on Wednesday though. We don't get it any earlier than Wednesday. But
So. I'm in there like 10 a.m. though.
No, but yeah, exactly. There have been times where books I didn't order that I wanted, and because I was work, I didn't get the store like 6 or 7, and they sold out. And I'm at a pretty big major store in a major city. Like you know, like unless the only way you guarantee what you want is by ordering. That's the thing. So
yeah.
All right. So if you have any questions, you can call and leave us a voicemail. 1-888 Fanboys. It's 1-888-326-2697. And this weekend we're enjoying the holiday weekend, right, Josh?
Trying to. We have a Don't Miss podcast that usually comes out on Monday. We're not sure. I don't think there's going to be. There could be a show. Probably is going to be a show.
Basically,
there could be Christmas. Maybe not. We don't know.
The holidays and cons always make things difficult. So if you come around Monday or Tuesday and there's no Don't Miss, it's probably because the creators we're trying to track down are enjoying the 4th of July holiday that we have.
Sometimes you set something up and then it just goes away.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, I didn't really plan for a third. Yeah. Anyway, if that does come out, it normally comes out on Monday. And as we talk about a book, it's a podcast. You can go back and subscribe to it. We talk about a book that's coming out that Wednesday that you may not have known about, some kind of different book.
Yep, with a creator behind it. Yeah, exactly.
That's the key.
Yep. It's not just a random person off the street that we're talking.
No, that would be terrible.
Yep. So
be a bad show.
You can find the Don't Miss podcast in iTunes or subscribe to it there, or you can find it on ifanboy.com every Monday, as well as all the other great content that's up on ifanboy.com all through the week. You can see Josh's Pick of the Week review that was written and posted up last Wednesday. Every Wednesday we got the new Pick of the Week review. Book of the Month is coming. It's going to be out next week, so keep an eye out for that. And again, you know, Paul, Mike, Jim, and Molly, everybody who's been writing, Chris, everybody who's been kicking ass on the site, definitely if you're not reading ifanboy.com, you're missing out, because there's a lot of good stuff going on there. So follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/ifanboy, or follow go to Facebook and fan up our fan page on facebook.com/ifanboy, so you don't miss a thing. And if you were looking for our audio podcast talk about Transformers, we are still going to do it. We're just a little delayed. The holiday mix, you know, kind of ran into our planning schedule and that sort of thing, but you can keep an eye out on ifanboy.com for our eventual Transformers audio podcast review. And we do have a video show, which comes out every Wednesday. And this past Wednesday, we had our annual barbecue episode where me, Josh, and Connor went outside and ate some meat and talked comics. And it was a good meal. And this coming up this week, we just can't get off the topic of reboots. And we're talking about other reboots that have happened in comic history.
I thought it said other robots.
Nice.
Well, that would be fun.
Other Robots is a good show idea, but
I'll write that down.
No, but we're talking.
Is a good show idea.
Miscellaneous Robots.
It is.
I'm sorry.
We're talking about other reboots in comics history. So if you're interested in the concept of rebooting a whole line of comics, you're going to want to tune in this Wednesday.
It gets awkward.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc.
And if you like us, you can leave a review in iTunes, or better yet, you can just tell people about it. Spread word of mouth. Post on your various social networking links. Just be like, hey, this show was good. Here's a link to it.
That was kind of awesome. And
that was, you know, it was, hey, go to 1522. It gets weird. something like that. But also the iTunes reviews for not just this show, but all the other ones we have, or any podcast you like, are just a wonderful way for us to get exposure for any podcast to sort of get pushed up.
Here's what you should do. Thinking outside of the box, thinking holidays, thinking 4th of July. You should put the podcast on a thumb drive and then duct tape it to a bottle rocket. And then send it up on the 4th of July, and someone will find it in a parking lot, and they'll check it out.
If you do that, take pictures and send it to us, and we will give you a special reward, because I think that's a great idea, and I don't think anyone's going to do it. So, okay. Unfortunately, right. This is coming out after 4th of July, so they might have used up all their bottle rockets. But if you put a podcast on a thumb drive and somehow surreptitiously leave it in this world, I will personally send you something.
Or put the thumb drive in a bottle and then cork it and like weatherproof it and then throw it out to sea.
Exactly,
like on your yacht,
exactly. With instructions. With instructions.
If anyone
takes up this challenge, and I'm going to limit it, I'm like the first person or the first or second person. I can't, like, hundreds of people don't do this. I'm not going to be able to do it. But if anybody anybody actually does this, email us pictures at contact@ifanboy.com because I would love to fucking see that in the real life.
I don't believe that that is environmentally conscious.
I don't think it is either. So
yeah.
All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Paul.
I'm off to get some fireworks. I want to see what Ron's going to send me.